good morning and welcome, welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio in a very rainy downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Lots coming up on today's show. Our colleague and the host of Amicus A Brief on weekends here on Civic Media, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, is going to join us at 10:33, and we're going to talk about the decision from the Supreme Court yesterday, essentially granting presidents pretty much complete and total immunity, no matter what they do. So we're going to break that down a little bit, because again, we are not lawyers. We are lawyer adjacent. And Jim Santel is going to be here to talk about the Supreme's decision yesterday and also hopefully the Chevron decision and what that means for us, just as, I don't know, people who drink water and breathe air and things like that.
I do both of those things.
Do you do those things?
I enjoy them highly.
Yep. Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters Wisconsin coming in at 11:06 to talk about these two amendments that are going to be on the August ballot that you really should vote no.
Yes.
And
correct. Sorry.
Yeah, they kind of snuck this on there at the last minute.
What?
Which would essentially just take more power away from the governor's office and give it to the legislature. Which, as we know, they're so productive the way it is. We certainly want to give them more control over handing out money in emergencies because they're really, really good at that.
They're already good at hoarding piles of cash allocated for certain things like PFAS and healthcare and things like that.
Hospitals.
This would just make it easier for them to not do anything at all. Maybe just give them that full year break they've been looking for.
I think that's a nice idea.
Yeah, 12 months off. You go, woo.
Take a breath.
Relax, guys.
Take a breath. 11:33, PFLAG Waukesha. Jacob Knuth is going to join us in studio this 4th of July. For the first time ever, PFLAG will be marching in the Waukesha 4th of July parade.
I love PFLAG.
PFLAG is great. We've talked to them numerous times. And Jacob Knuth joining us at 11:33 to explain all of that. I do want to start out with Brittany Merlot. We have some internal chats going on, and she did express concern about all of the rain that we're getting.
Yes.
And we've talked about this many times, and certainly for our poor farmers who are trying to get out in the fields. But we are going to get slammed with a lot of rain today. Some areas could see 2 inches of rain. So Richland Center, Baraboo Adams area, and even into Oshkosh have the highest chances for 2 inches of rain. And that could cause some flash flooding in urban areas. And rivers continue to rise. If you were planning on doing some camping on the 4th of July weekend, find some high ground.
Yeah.
Don't camp along the side of a river. That's probably not a good idea.
I don't mean to be a Daniel Downer here, but you also might want to rethink the weekend of camping.
We have a lot more rain coming.
People can camp in the rain. I know you're tough. I know the rain's the rain, but it's supposed to rain Friday. It's supposed to rain Sunday. It's going to be a lot of rain. I don't know. We're just putting it out there. Do what you do,
but be careful and please keep up on things. And just
be careful.
If there's standing water, don't drive through it. That's another good reminder.
There you go.
Because you don't know how deep it is. All right. Before Jim Santel joins us at 10:33, I wanted to start off with this breaking story this morning from Laura Schulte in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. GOP blocked funding that would have allowed the transfer of a youth tied to the Lincoln Hills death. If you missed this, there was a youth charged in the fatal beating of a guard at Lincoln Hills. This happened about 2 weeks ago. And it turns out, according to this article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this youth was supposed to have been transferred to a different facility that treats severely disturbed youth. And that transfer did not happen because additional beds have not been placed at this other facility. Because why? Because the Republican-led legislature is sitting on the money.
Ding, ding, ding.
Again.
Yep.
They're really good at doing nothing.
It's almost we should make a list of things. Like, so there's PFA money they won't give, they won't do.
And I think it's important for people to recognize that the reason why the Republicans won't release this money for PFAS is because they want, in their world, they want polluters to not be held accountable for polluting.
Yeah.
That's the sticking point for them.
That is more important than clean water.
Yes.
And healthy people. Healthy Wisconsinites.
We have to let businesses do whatever they need to do to make a profit, apparently. And as you said, Greg, rather than, I don't know, have clean drinking water and air we can breathe and things like that. No, they're just going to sit on it.
Yep.
Wisconsin has suffered through years of lawsuits and abuse allegations at this facility, alleging excessive use of pepper spray, strip searches, and restraints against detainees. Teenagers suffered injuries within the facility, like brain damage and even toes that had to be amputated. One of these incidents in 2017 sparked a lawsuit that led to the appointment of a court-ordered monitor to oversee conditions at the youth prison complex. The state paid out more than $25 million in court settlements and legal fees. The monitor is still overseeing the facilities. The state has not yet met all of the outlined requirements for this. And now lawmakers are pointing to these restrictions as the reason for the death of 49-year-old Corey Prolix after he was assaulted in the prison on June 24th. Another 25-year-old guard also injured during the incident. 16-year-old Javarius Hurd charged last week with second-degree reckless homicide. In that death, Republican lawmakers on the state's Joint Finance Committee have voted against authorizing the release of funding to expanding staffing at the Mendota Juvenile Treatment Center in Madison as it wraps up necessary renovations to help state officials carry out the law to shut down that prison in Irma. So again, they're just sitting on the money. They're really good at that.
Yeah. And they are really, their reasons are just so solid too. I mean, we can make a list now. There's PFAS. There's this. I mean, I'm going to throw expanding Medicaid in there. I want to keep on repeating that. We are one of 10 states who have had expanded Medicaid since Obamacare has taken over or has become an option in this country. One of 10. One of 10. And I know this sounds crazy, and I'm not doing this to talk about baseball, but I'm going to throw the Brewers when it comes to the money aspect of it all. When Governor Evers proposed taking a chunk of the surplus to renovate the stadium as they needed to do, the Republicans said, no, we don't want to do that. Not for any other reason. They didn't want to hand Governor Evers a win. Yeah. So what they do, propose a $600 million quote-unquote solution. A Republican should never be allowed on the JFC. They're terrible with money. They're awful with it.
Well, they're really good at sitting on it.
Which is awful because there are people who are in danger with their water. I mean, you can't tell me you care.
Co-chairs of the committee, Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam and Senator Howard Markline of Spring Green, said the money hasn't been granted because there are other open positions the facility hasn't filled yet. It's our understanding that only very recently did these positions start being filled, while the expansion is not yet fully online, despite having significant position authority. I wish they would just speak English.
Well, that's how they get you to trail off and not care and to be like, oh, okay, whatever.
Senator Mary Felskowski from Tomahawk said in a statement, I'm finding it difficult to keep my anger at bay as I think about why this occurred, speaking about the death of this guard and how it was allowed to occur. For far too long, I've been sounding the alarm. It was always a matter of when, not if, a tragedy like this would happen at Lincoln Hills. As we give Corey's family time to process this life-altering heartbreak, I want to assure his colleagues, my community, the legislature will leave no stone unturned as we work towards accountability and justice. Felskowski, again, according to this article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is a member of the Joint Finance Committee, and she did not mention the objection to releasing the money in that press release.
Take your justice, shove it where the sun don't shine, release that money, and do something about it. Because this is ridiculous.
Just do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Yeah.
On behalf of your constituents.
Yeah.
Not your donors. Not your corporate masters. Do something for your constituents. I know it's a wacky, far out thought. This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why
we can't have anything.
This is another example, too, of reactive thinking. You know, if the money is there to be proactive, to take care of the facility, to do all the things that need to be done. Instead, now someone's dead and a young person is going to get charged with it. Now, I'm not going to get into conversation of whether that should or shouldn't happen, but there are a person who has died doing their job when this could have been, if not solved, at least prepared for.
Yep.
But no, we want justice. We want justice now. How about never having to do this in the first place?
Well, and as you said, so much of what we do now is totally reactive. It's like that sinkhole that we talked about last week.
Yes.
Why? Sinkholes. And in Whitefish Bay, the pipe that broke was 90 years old.
Yep. Yep. And the gentleman we were talking to about that, he said that there are some municipalities that have pipes made of wood.
They're that old.
This is all reactive. And now it's going to cost close to $500,000. Well,
In Whitefish, yeah, that sinkhole has already cost $500,000.
Yeah.
And I realize, I mean, municipalities are in a terrible situation with funding. Mm-hmm. They are struggling to provide services for their communities.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to see us do something before there's a disaster that requires a response like this.
Infrastructure. It's not sexy. It's important. So.
Well done, Wisconsin GOP, for again being really, really good at accomplishing nothing. Someone who is actually doing things will be the subject when we return. You can always join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network.
A swing man. She can't hit. She don't mean no.
Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board. Coming to you from our studio in rainy downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our colleague and host of Amicus, a legal brief on Saturdays here on Civic Media, Jim Santel, joining us right after the 10:30 news to talk about the Supreme Court decision essentially saying, yep, Donald Trump can shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and nobody's going to do anything about it. And then we will break down the Chevron decision as well. And then at 11:06, Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters Wisconsin will be here to explain the two constitutional amendments that are going to be on the ballots in August. Vote no.
Vote no.
On both of them.
Yes.
And we will explain why and take a look again at what this would do. And essentially, we were just talking about how nothing gets done in Wisconsin because the Republican Party just sits on the money. This will essentially give them the control of more money that they can then just sit on.
Or distribute how they see fit.
Right. So that's coming up at 11:06. Stick around for that. We were just talking about how little is getting done in Wisconsin because of the Joint Finance Committee. Thank you so much. There is someone who's actually getting things done here.
Who?
Senator Tammy Baldwin.
Wait, what?
A big win for Wisconsin in the biohealth field after a nationwide competition. Wisconsin named one of 12 regional tech hubs. This means $49 million in federal funding to bolster biohealth manufacturing, medical research, and job opportunities in the Milwaukee-Madison area. Tammy Baldwin played a part in bringing this money here. The state of Wisconsin will kick in $7.5 million. Another $24 million from private and industry groups will bring the total to almost $80 million for Wisconsin's tech hub.
Yep. It's amazing stuff.
It really is. And this is the wave of the future. This is what's coming.
Yes. This tech jobs and green jobs, they're American jobs. They're here to stay. I can't say they can't be outsourced, but it behooves companies to be building in America. And Wisconsin's great. I mean, like we had the Microsoft deal with
Foxconn debacle.
The Foxconn.
Yeah.
And this on top of it, if I'm not mistaken, it projected to create 30,000 jobs.
30,000 jobs and an anticipated $9 billion in growth over the next 10 years.
I mean, that is, look, come on. That's good stuff. This is not a right lens. This is not a left lens. This is nothing other than this is good for us as Wisconsin.
Yes.
Good for your kids. I mean, 30,000 jobs, that's a job that you or your kid or your grandkid can get. That's just objectively good.
I'm sure there's going to be someone who will complain, right?
Yeah.
You got to, I mean, again, we're at a place now in politics where you can't ever give a win to the other side. You can't acknowledge that this was a good thing. So I highly doubt we'll be hearing anything from Wisconsin Republicans on, yay, this is good, unless they want to just take credit for it.
Yeah. But you know what, though? Here's the thing is, like, Tammy Baldwin knows how to do this game. If someone wants to walk in, if, you know, a certain, as Chad Holmes referred to him, as a certain show horse wants to walk in to this game and say, we did this together, I think Tammy Baldwin would shake hands with our other senator and be like, whatever it takes to get it done, we just got to get it done. And that's the difference between a show horse and a workhorse. Tammy Baldwin works for this state, and no one can deny it.
Senator Tammy Baldwin actively supported this legislation and efforts to bring the tech hub to Wisconsin. Today's announcement recognizes Wisconsin's rich history of innovation and manufacturing and doubles down on the state's potential to be a major player in the next chapter of an up-and-coming industry. That's important because we are not seeing a lot of people moving to Wisconsin.
No.
And we need younger people to move here.
And the mayor just announced that he wants to build more housing in Milwaukee. And if you want to attract people to Milwaukee, Madison, Kenosha, Green Bay, you have to have attractive aspects, jobs, affordable housing.
Yes.
Clean water.
Clean air.
Clean air. If you are a person who likes the up north, Preservation and Conservation Act.
Of resource
goals.
Protecting our natural resources. Absolutely. Yeah.
This is a great state. This is an amazing state with amazing people. And it's about time we start showing the world that, because honestly, the past decade plus, people got a real bad thought on Wisconsin, and I understand that, but this feels like, is there sunshine coming through the door, Jane?
We'll take a little ray where we can grab it.
Tony Zimmerman provided a nice knock on it from whomever. These jobs pay too much. It's making it too hard for other companies to keep up. You're hurting small business.
Thank you, Tony, for that opposite perspective.
Yes,
that's absolutely needed. In case you haven't heard it, you know, not everyone obviously is a big fan of Senator Tammy Baldwin. And there have been some attack ads that bought specifically for our show, Matt and Air on Air. I believe, Calvin, we have one of those completely real and totally legitimate attack ads. Take a listen.
Wisconsin's two U.S. senators couldn't be more different. Democrat Tammy Baldwin keeps getting things done for her constituents. She helped secure funding for infrastructure projects like the Blatnik Bridge and made sure Wisconsin seniors can afford life-saving insulin. But Republican Senator Ron Johnson knows exactly what needs to happen to make your life better.
I think we'd be far better off if we never passed another piece of legislation.
This November, elect the wealthy California guy who sits in frozen lakes. Just like Senator Johnson, he'll work hard when he gets to Washington, just not for you.
Paid for by the We Got Nothing Else Super PAC. Also, Senator Baldwin has no idea who we are and does not endorse this message.
Ouch.
So dramatic.
Yeah. Ooh, ow, so I guess as we head to the polls in November, do we want things to get done or never pass another piece of legislation because that's the way to govern? Something to think about.
That doesn't sound like a good country to me.
When we return, because news is coming up next, our colleague Jim Santel will be joining us to talk about the Supreme Court decision yesterday on immunity, also the overturn of the Chevron doctrine, and what that means for people like us who like to drink water that's not poisoned and breathe air that's not poisoned. That's all on the way after the news. And just a reminder, Civic Media also has tunes, Greg Bach.
What?
You can listen to the best of the 80s, 90s, and more. All you have to do is download the Civic Media app completely free. And then search for 105.7 CFW in Eau Claire or 99.7 Max FM out of Baraboo and Wisconsin Dells if you want to have some tunes with you over the long 4th of July weekend. So
that sounds great.
Download the Civic Media app. It is completely free. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest here. We've been working on this for a couple of weeks. He is a former United States attorney in Wisconsin and a Justice Department official in Washington. And he is also host of Amicus, a law review here on Civic Media on Saturdays. Jim Santel is joining us. Good morning, Jim. Thanks so much for being here.
Jane, what an absolute delight to be with you, my friend, and also with Greg and all of you there, and including Calvin. Good to be with you on a momentous day and time in American history, undeniably.
Yeah. First of all, you had a two-part series over the weekend on your show, correct? It aired Saturday and Sunday.
Exactly. We did a review, if you will, of 10 cases, 10, count them, 10 cases that were issued by the Supreme Court just last week. Each one of them fairly momentous, everything from homelessness to opioids to social media, things across the board that are going to affect us dramatically. And the thought, of course, was we knew that Monday, yesterday, the Supreme Court would be issuing at least this immunity decision, also social media. So we're plainly anticipating that, not anticipating the extent to which the Supreme Court has gone in basically changing America. And I would offer Jane, Greg, Kelvin, rescinding a portion of the Constitution of the United States of America. You know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I try not to be hyperbolic. I know you and Greg likewise don't try to be over the top on these things. We try not to have our hair on fire. This is a time in America, as we go into the 248th anniversary of our nation, when Americans should have their hair on fire. This is, I maintain, this is the most significant Supreme Court decision in our lifetime. And that's understanding completely the very serious nature of things like abortion, environment, and education, and transportation, commerce, all the other things we do on a regular basis, all of those hugely important. This one goes to who we are as a nation. It is a threshold to all of those other things. And the Supreme Court has just dealt a dramatic blow to who we are as a nation, to what we are. And I think there is a reason, as the dissenters, including Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson, have said so eloquently, there's a reason to be concerned about the future of the republic. That is not hyperbole. at 10:35 on a Tuesday morning.
No, we're not overstating the significance of this. We are not overreacting to the significance of this. As you said, Jim, this fundamentally changes how our country operates and essentially does say that if you're the president, you are above the law.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're not completely surprised. Well, we were surprised at the time of the oral argument, right, Jane, right, Greg, when the Supreme Court decided to take up this notion seriously, that there is any immunity at all for a sitting president or a former president. That was absurd, beyond any possibility. And we were shocked when, again, during the course of that argument, they were taking this seriously. Signals from that oral argument that, okay, there may go down this road of some official, non-official bifurcation of how you classify things. And that was troubling enough to see that the Supreme Court might be carving out activities that a chief executive could engage in that are criminal but not punishable. That had our hair on fire at that time. But we still anticipated that this opinion would be okay. Send it back to Judge Chutkan. Let her sort this out. Let her figure out what this is all about. It does that, but it basically does her work for her. And I would also maintain, as we get into the substance of this, that in many ways, it basically dismisses portions of the indictment against Donald Trump, certainly as to all the engagement with the Department of Justice, something, as you and Greg know well, near and dear to my heart. When the Supreme Court says that a president, when he or she one day has communications with the Attorney General of the United States of America, and those may be a part advancing a criminal conspiracy of some kind, whatever it is, and there's no response to that. There can be no impunity. There is impunity for that, and there's no response to it in terms of, well, I'll tell you what, Richard Nixon is calling from 1974. He wants his presidency back.
Yeah.
Because that is precisely the reason why we got Richard Nixon out of that office again many, many years ago. The Supreme Court has basically rescinded that fundamental notion that the president cannot obstruct justice, cannot direct a Department of Justice to engage in criminal conduct. And that part of the opinion is clear. Complete immunity, absolute immunity as for Department of Justice engagement. That alone is enough to be shocked. There is more, of course, that goes on beyond those particular issues. But that DOJ piece really does reverse history, reverses who we are again as we go forward as a nation.
So just to clarify that a little bit, Jim. So essentially now, if Donald Trump is reelected, he can call the Justice Department and say, I want you to go after these people.
Right, exactly.
And you know, that's perfectly fine. This can be just a personal vendetta. It can be somebody he doesn't like. It could be someone who said something that hurt his feelings. For whatever reason, now you can just go in and instruct the Department of Justice to go after people, and that's perfectly fine.
Exactly. There's a paragraph, actually more than a paragraph, in this order that says, as to engagements between a president and the Attorney General, which again are part of this indictment, that was the attempt, again, to undermine the election, to get the, at that point, acting as Attorney General to send out information that there has been fraud and so forth and do other things on Capitol Hill. As to that, the Chief Justice and the majority say the president is absolutely immune from prosecution. Can't touch that at all. Anything the president does or says in terms of whether it is legitimate or illegitimate, of course, would be the focus of it. You can't touch that. And again, as I say, as to that piece alone, Tanya Chutkan's work is done. She will have to necessarily preclude introduction of any evidence about that. It takes out a huge chunk. Remember, this is the engagement where Donald Trump is saying, well, gee, I may replace the Attorney General because at that time, the acting Attorney General was not doing exactly what Donald Trump wanted, was not sending out the letters to Congress to other states saying, hey, there's great fraud. You need to do something about this. And the acting Attorney General said, Mr. President, you do that. And I'm resigning. Everybody's resigning.
Right.
That's false. The Justice Department does not do that. The Supreme Court told us 24 hours ago that kind of conduct is okay under our Constitution. And a present or future president cannot be punished for that kind of behavior, can't do anything in response. That alone is shocking. And of course, there's more. goes on to say that even with respect to the vice president, remember all that, the attempt to try to coerce Mike Pence right. into throwing the election, the fake elector scheme, they talk about that, all sorts of other communications on January 6th and before, all of the others, you know what the Supreme Court says about those? It says, well, you know what? They present kind of close questions, and we should let the trial court judge and the evidence as it goes forward figure that out. It's not quite as, it's not as clear as it is with the Department of Justice, but as to all those others, we're going to send that back, and maybe there is immunity, maybe there isn't, and it underscores this other fundamentally peculiar and bizarre notion created yesterday about presumptive immunity. The president is presumed to be immune, and what is the burden they're also, this is just so wild, what is the burden they're imposing now upon the prosecutor? They're requiring Jack Smith to overcome that presumption of immunity. The prosecutor's got to come in and establish that indeed, not only did these events happen, but there's something about these particular events that do not interrupt the basic function, the integrity, as the Supreme Court describes it, of the presidency itself. The burden is now upon the prosecution to show that there is not immunity. The presumption is there is in all those other areas. And one final thing as I get jump off my soapbox here, and that is that the Supreme Court also reaches in and provides an evidentiary guide here. Says, you know what, beyond that, Mr. Prosecutor, you cannot present any evidence of the official acts of a president when trying to establish the unofficial acts, the things that were done improperly. And for that reason, basically, you can't talk about things that are in the Constitution to try to establish that very lack of immunity that you're required to show. Amy Coney Barrett, to her credit, in her concurring opinion, takes off after that and says, no, that's craziness. That is completely unfounded. And I will tell you, as a prosecutor for 30 years, I have never, ever seen a Supreme Court case in which they basically identify and then resolve this evidentiary matter having to do with how it is that the government will prove its case. It basically ties Jack Smith's hands. And I have to tell you right now, Jack Smith and others there at Main Justice and the special counsel's office are not only poring over this, they're thinking, what do we do next? What do we have left in this case? And as much as Tanya Chutkan got just dumped on with this horrific assignment of trying to figure this case out, in many ways, I think it's done. And given the evidentiary burdens here and the other things that the court has said about presuming in all cases that the president is immune, that undermines, again, not only the basic tenet of this prosecution, but as I said, we are teetering. This is a constitutional matter. We are teetering. As Sonia Sotomayor said, the republic is in danger. And again, Ketanji Brown Jackson goes on at great length, got some great language, if we can even read it out loud if you like, about the threat to our republic. Beyond Donald Trump, beyond this prosecution, what you're doing right now is twisting 248 years. And as we come up on the anniversary of our birth of our nation, one has to wonder if this is the beginning of the end of our nation. And that is not hyperbole. That is not hyperbole.
If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest. He's a former United States attorney in Wisconsin. He was a Justice Department official in Washington and is the host on Saturdays of Amicus, a Law Review. And we were talking about the Supreme Court decision yesterday, essentially granting complete and total immunity to the office of the presidency. I do find it interesting, Jim, that we went all of this time and we've had all of these presidents before this, then we didn't need to do this until Donald Trump. And I want to go back to, you mentioned the arguments that happened in front of the courts setting the basis for all of this. We have a clip from Justice Sotomayor listening to Donald Trump's lawyer argue. It's not a very long clip, but please take a listen to this.
If the president decides that his rival is a corrupt person and he orders the military or orders someone to assassinate him, is that within his official acts that for which he can get immunity?
It would depend on the hypothetical, but we can see that could well be an official act.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, that could be, you know, we'll check the specifics, but yeah, that sounds fine.
Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. Yeah.
And it kind of depends, is what he's saying. And Sonia Sotomayor, again, is incredulous during the oral argument. And then she writes yesterday this, if you will indulge me just a little bit. The president of the United States is the most powerful person in the country, possibly the world. She says, when he uses his official powers in any way under the majority's reasoning, he will now be insulated from criminal prosecution. Following up with the tape you just played, Jane and Greg, orders the Navy SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival, immune. Organize a military coup to hold on to power, immune. Take a bribe in exchange for a pardon, immune. Immune, immune, immune. That's what Sonia Sotomayor is. Let the president violate the law. Let him exploit the trappings of his office for personal gain. Let him use his official power for evil ends. Because if he knew that he may one day face liability for breaking the law, he might not be as bold and fearless as we would like him to be. That is the majority's message to America today. That's Sonia Sotomayor following up and saying what she was concerned about at that time has come real.
Yeah.
And that's the message.
And that's the reality that we're in right now. Yep. We're going to take a short break, Jim, and we will continue this conversation. Jim Santel is our guest. He hosts Amicus, a law review here on Civic Media on Saturdays. I highly encourage you to check it out. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Very excited to be joined by our colleague Jim Santel. He hosts Amicus, a law review on Saturdays here on Civic Media. I highly encourage you to check that out. We are talking about the ruling by the Supreme Court yesterday that essentially gives a president's, even former presidents, complete and total immunity for anything that they want to do ever. And the one thing that really jumped out at me yesterday, Jim, and I'm not a lawyer and I have trouble even understanding what some of these briefs say because of the verbiage that they use. But the one thing that really jumped out at me was you can't go after motive. You cannot include motive as a deciding on whether or not this was a criminal act. That doesn't make any sense. Isn't motive at the heart of most prosecutions?
Right. And Jane and Greg, my lawyer friends, you don't have to be lawyers to understand that. Your perception is just right on target. When I read that too, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, once again, they're getting involved in the evidentiary presentation here. Supreme Courts don't do that. But beyond that, precisely, that's exactly what all criminal cases are about. Intent, purpose, motive. And if Jack Smith is not able to explain or present evidence to the jury about the reasons why Donald Trump did these things, reached out to the vice president, reached out to other people, said things on January 6th. Juries not only want to know the reason for that, it's actually a part of the elements of the offense. It as to all of these charges, one of the things that the prosecutors have got to prove is intent. And again, juries will be very interested to know about the specific events, but they always ask, okay, why did Jim Santel rob the bank?
Right.
What was going on here, right? What was the reason for it? You don't do that and you lose the case. And again, that issue, Jane, that you've just identified, the prohibition now that Tanya Chutkan has got to say, members of the jury, you cannot consider motive. And oh, by the way, Jack Smith, don't go down that road. You cannot present any evidence about the reasons why this was underway. That's the core of the case. It was an attempt to interfere with the election. It was an attempt to stay in power. Absent that, once again, the core of the case is gone. And that issue, once again, shows how virulent this opinion is in shutting down this case. That's why, once again, I come back to this notion. Is there anything left for Jack Smith to do? Is there anything left for Tanya Chutkan to decide? even though we're anticipating these messy hearings, which I can't even begin to contemplate, that evidentiary issue also looms large. Absolutely.
It almost sounds like the court designed their, tailored their decision around making it impossible to get him prosecuted for January 6th. It's like they said, make sure you write this and make sure you write that. I mean, right. The taking away of motive, that is, I mean, anyone listening right now who's watched a law show, Law and Order, they're always right. talking about, they can't shut up about motive. It's the number one thing that, whether besides DNA evidence, right. to take it away. I mean, you cannot tell me that the court didn't tailor and design this decision to basically take Jack Smith's legs out from under him, period. You can't right. convince me of that.
Yeah. And Greg, I think you've got it absolutely right. You know, the way these things come together, obviously the six of them agree to this with, again, Amy Coney Barrett, a little bit of a variation on the side there, but they do sit around and they say, okay, how do you vote on this? Yeah, we want to give Donald Trump, this is not in the public domain. We want to give him some immunity here. And each one of them contributes to this, right? And they all add their particular paragraphs. Maybe they excise some things. It is a product of back and forth, as are the concurrences. The three of them on the other side, likewise, share those back and forth, and they agree, and they go in opposite directions on things. My guess is, Greg, you've got it just right. At some point, somebody said, oh, I've got another idea. Let's shut down motive. In addition to preventing the prosecution from talking at all about official acts, as opposed to unofficial. Yeah, that's another good thing we can do. We can carve out the Department of Justice. We can make sure that all the other ones are really on the edge, and we'll give an awful lot of indication that we think Tanya Chutkan should get rid of those two. But as to this, let's add that. Yeah, Clarence is right, or Neil is right. Let's add that one in as well. It is a kitchen sink type approach to attacking this prosecution. And then the upshot of all this is, you have a presidency, a truly an imperial presidency, because this is the law now, not only for this case, but down the road as well. Every single president, until one day this comes back and some future Supreme Court says the Trump versus United States was improperly decided, which maybe to save a republic, that's what we need. But until that happens, this is the law of the land. And that's why, again, on Independence Day, this should be so very concerning for every single American.
And the other thing to remind folks, too, is that if Donald Trump gets another term, he could very well appoint several more justices to the Supreme Court. And so ideologically, it is already massively unbalanced, and that will just lock things up. I do find it a little short-sighted on behalf of the six Supremes that they don't think that, I don't know, they might not do something on behalf of Donald Trump at some point, and he orders to have them assassinated as an official act.
Right. I mean, it's just all these things that Sonia Sotomayor identifies. It gives you a huge amount of again, latitude to do things we can't imagine. And even saying them out loud today is just absurd. But it does opens all kinds of doors. Another door that, of course, is opened out there, which, again, is serious. I know that our present president, Joe Biden, has said, no, I'm not I'm not buying into this. He has made a very clear, rule of law is important. But the reality is that this opinion that was issued yesterday applies to, and I say this with my tongue somewhat in cheek, to King Joseph Biden, that all these things that supposedly directed at Donald Trump, Joe Biden now has immunity for all of this, too. That's, do what you want, Joe.
Yeah.
Do what you want, Joe.
Yeah.
For the next 200 days, at least the next 200 days, that is the subject of an awful lot of people out there who are thinking about what this may or may not mean.
Mm-hmm. Jim, we could have you on for the next hour and a half, happily. I know you're a busy guy, and we have another guest booked for after 11 o'clock, but I highly, highly encourage you to check out Jim's show, Amicus, a Law Review, 9 o'clock on Saturdays, Jim.
That's exactly right. Always a pleasure to be with you. And we'll come back anytime to talk more and pontificate about Supreme Court and the future of America, especially. Thanks so much, Jane. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Jim. We'll get you back as soon as we can set something up. Really appreciate it. All right. Stay close. News is coming up next when we return. Constitutional amendments on the August ballot here in Wisconsin. Vote no, and we'll tell you why. That's all on the way coming up. You're listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wisconsin.